Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, John.
Oh, well, we've got some more remote viewing experiments going on, and then we're going to have some words with Doug Kelly.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. There's an important announcement about Paranexus tonight, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
I was kind of excited about it when I heard what was going on, because that's really going to open the doors for us on a lot of different things. So, what else did you come across? I saw something you had posted in the forum thread about somebody's evaluation of actual paranormal video.
Yeah, I mean, the last part of the show, I actually want to just talk about this piece of video that was debunked and just the nature of the video and how it got debunked and just basically kind of just talk about professionalism within the community.
Oh, okay, cool. That'd be great. Well, do you want to move on to the remote viewing stuff first, and we'll just get that out of the way? And
yeah, I've got some questions for you, though. Evidently, you know, you're entering a new stage of doing this in terms of cues. Can you, like, kind of walk us through how that differs from what we've done so far?
Okay, well, the two remote viewing coordinates that we have for tonight, the two targets, are not cued targets. A cued target is where it actually defines location, the time zone, more or less, time area or time span that you're talking about. Like, for instance, I want to say that it's your house, right? So I'd say John Rossi's house last Sunday, okay? Living,
uh-huh.
And then I would start breaking it down even further, go living room, and then I would have, like, say, what's in the box in the living room. But the thing of it is, with a cue, is you really have to be careful with the words contained within a cue, because what it ends, you got to remember not to leave it open-ended. Okay? Like, for instance, if I were going to identify what was in the box in your living room or whichever room you've got it in, you cannot have another box in that room, or I may zoom in on it. Do you understand what I'm saying with that? I mean, it's kind of like you can't leave it ambiguous with your cue information. And what essentially happens now is, after you come up with your cue list, you still assign it those numbers.
Okay. So in the future, would I be giving you a cue list?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you would go ahead, just like you say, first target, and you give the numbers, right? Well, you'd also produce a cue list, which what this does, from what I'm to understand, is it actually helps you zero in on the target that you're after. You know, I've been having problems with the zoom issue. You know, I'm either too far back and getting too much information, or I'm too far in and not getting the actual target. Well, what a cue does is actually helps you, kind of like a scope does on a rifle, it helps you narrow the field of what you're looking at.
Okay, well, I'm a little confused then.
Okay.
Just in terms of, like, it sounds like I'm giving you information that could potentially, you know, help you with the target. identify the target. Is that correct or not correct?
Well, what it does is it specifies location of the target, specifies the time that you're wanting to look at, the time span. And it's not necessarily that you're identifying the target itself. You're identifying the surrounding structure, so I have a way to actually zero in on the actual target. So, like, for instance, if you're doing an investigation, police investigation, we're trying to find a body, okay? You know for a fact the body's been dumped in this field. Well, instead of just saying randomly, hey, it's somewhere in Arkansas, you'd actually specify that somewhere in that field this body's been buried. Well, because of that, I'll be able to zero in on that location and start looking for it through remote viewing. Now, instead of just saying body, you would have to say murder victim or whatever to specify what's in that field.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? I'm getting at?
Yeah, I think so. Some weeks ago, you were doing some impromptu readings with people or viewings with people in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
And they were essentially giving you some cues.
That's correct. And that's what I was going to say. I was going to go further to say that when I was doing the cold readings, the fact that the people are in context with me talking to them or whatever and saying, what's in my living room, right, or what's on my table, those are cues. That gives me a general location to go look at. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So that's what the cueing is about. Now, the danger in cues are you can be too ambiguous and get all kinds of bad information out of it, and that's what you have to generally be careful of when constructing a cue list for a remote viewer to go check information out.
All right, so, like, I mean, are we talking level of specific thing like John Rossi's kitchen,
mm-hmm.
Sunday 10 p.m.,
yeah.
What's on it?
What's on it? Well,
yeah.
that could range anywhere from tables, chairs, dishes.
So we're even going further. John Rossi's kitchen, kitchen table. What's on John Rossi's kitchen table Sunday, what are we, the 29th, 10 p.m.?
Fried eggs, flat sausage, biscuits.
actually folded laundry, but
anyway, you know what I'm saying, that's right. The way that would work, you see what I'm getting at though, see, because
okay.
You zeroed it down, that's my point though, you see, but the further you get into defining and refining the location and time span, what ends up happening is you don't get lost and seeing the whole picture all of a sudden.
Okay.
It gives your subconscious mind a way to zero in on the information you're looking for.
Okay, so, like, for instance, a couple weeks ago when I took pictures of the lake that was part of the farm,
mm-hmm.
you actually zeroed on and identified a number of buildings on the farm, but that wasn't directly in the photo. But if the photo was a wide-angled photo, they would have been.
Correct.
So, theoretically, with cues, that's going to eliminate that type of...
It's going to help me zero in on the actual target that you're wanting me to view, yes. And, you know, it's the same thing with that other picture with the infrared shot where I was zeroing in on the picture in the room.
Right.
Whereas I didn't, you know, it was identified as some kind of furniture or identified as, you know, whatever. But the fact of the matter is it gives the remote viewer a better sense of, the subconscious mind, a better sense of what is supposed to be going out. It's kind of like a Google search. You can give, like, for instance, if you go out and do a Google search on the word person, it'll come up with millions and millions and millions and millions of things feeding back to you. But if you go John Rossi person, there's only going to be probably a few of those hits come up on Google search because it's looking at the contextual names that it has in its database. Well, the way remote viewing works evidently is the same exact way as Google would. The more cues you give it to go out and do the search on, the better off and more refined your information will come back and give you. So,
all right. So, again, just since I'm going to have to now create cues for you, I guess I kind of understand in terms of objects,
mm-hmm.
okay? But how would you go about doing a person?
A person. Well, let's go a little further with that.
Let's use the example. Remember the guy that was kissing the camel?
Yes.
All right. And there was nothing else in the picture. It was just the guy kissing the camel, right?
Right.
So how would I have cued that photo for you?
That's a very good question. That'd probably be a good thought out. You know, like you'd probably say outdoor. I'm not too sure how you would go about cueing a person as a target. Those are random. See, what cues are designed for is you already have general information and you're trying to actually do like an investigative type remote viewing experience. Whereas with that, I'd have to just use coordinate system. If, like, okay, for instance, you have information on a crime or you have information on missing people, but that's all the information you have, you generally have to come up with the search terms or the cue terms to help me identify more information about that person, where they may be located, or, you know, you see what I'm getting at? This is more contextual on real life objects that are in the now or were in the now as compared to the photo and me looking at a photo through remote viewings.
Okay, so given the context of where that photo was taken, it was taken at the Shenandoah County Fair.
Okay, that's
it was an animal ride.
Okay.
And I'm assuming that was the trainer.
Okay, well, you wouldn't necessarily say trainer.
Right.
Well, you could use all that, but what I'm going to end up information with is more than likely where he's located right now, unless you give it a time span, okay, for, you know, information like during this time, where's he at?
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? You would say camel ride, the trainer, Shenandoah, you know, state fair, whatever it is, and then you would say time span. And what that does is it gives me a way to reference who and what you're talking about, or object-wise, what you're talking about, and then I can go find out where it's at in that time span.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a little different than just, you know, doing pictures. This is a totally taking it up a step.
Okay. Like, probably one of the most famous remote viewing cases that never happened was the CIA's program where they were having remote viewers look at the tunnel systems under Tehran during the time when they were thinking about, you know, rescuing the hostages when they were being held in Tehran.
Right.
So.
Well, what you would do is you would go Tehran.
Right.
You would say tunnel system. You'd say present. And see, here's the problem that they did not, more in all likelihood, they did not specify how old the tunnel system was. And that's the reason they picked up on the other tunnels instead of the tunnels that they were after.
Yeah, everyone might not know that backstory to that.
Actually, you know it better than I do.
Okay, well, supposedly the CIA had a remote viewing program that they disclosed, and then about a week after they had disclosed it, someone came back and said, oh, no, it was all a mistake. We didn't really actually have this program. So, you know, you can decide what that means. But allegedly, this remote viewing program had viewers looking at the tunnel systems in Tehran, and they were going to, you know, contribute information to the planning of a hostage rescue. Well, at some point along the way, CIA contacts got hold of the municipal plans for the city of Tehran, and they found the water and electrical system in terms of tunnels and stuff. Well, the remote viewers had mapped out a totally different tunnel system than the one that they've got access from in terms of the municipal system. So they just assumed that the remote viewers were wrong. Well, it turns out that they were actually both right, because underneath the municipal modern-day water and sewer system was an ancient tunnel system in Tehran. And evidently, the remote viewers were actually very accurate in mapping that out.
So that's and then again, like I said, the cue that they were probably given was, you know, the geographical location. They knew that there were tunnels there, so that was probably one of the keywords. But they did not and the time span, but they did not specify when the tunnels were created. Or the general, you know, like recent tunnels. You know, they could have said recent tunnel building or whatever. But, you know, the fact that they didn't do that, then it left tunnels being an ambiguous keyword, and then all of a sudden it's all open to interpretation by the remote viewer, and that's why you would get the ancient tunnel system.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm kind of excited about it. Next week ought to be pretty fun, next Sunday. But anyway, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and post my first one up for everybody. And let's see here. And actually, now that I've seen this part that they're talking about, this makes a heck of a lot more sense in how to use remote viewing as far as being a useful everyday thing. If that makes, you know what I mean? And they say also he made the statement that just remote viewing pictures is actually a harder technique than doing this other. So, all right, I've got it posted. Let me post the link in the chat room for everybody. And by the way, everybody listening in on archives, this, if you go to Paranexus and go to the forum and look under members in action and look for today's date, remote viewing, which is going to be August 29, 2010, you'll find the threads that we're talking about. And if everybody will go to the link that I've just posted in the chat room and look at the first thread, I've got my target up. So what does it look like to you, John?
Well,
is it way off or what?
Well, why don't you tell me? I mean, describe what you've got, okay?
Well, what essentially I has what I have here is more or less a building. The squares you see inside the building are probably tables. The little circles are people milling around the tables. It's a brick building, two stories. And then, of course, you know, the description is outdoors. There's a rainstorm off in the distance. I don't, you know, that's what I was hearing audibly. I was hearing rain, but it wasn't at my locations. Like, you know, you can hear rain off in the distance.
Uh-huh.
I was hearing that noise, but I don't know that what I came up with is totally correct. I think there were three people outside the building. But it's either people who are learning or investigating whatever's going on inside the building. So,
okay.
And that was target 987-05467.
Okay. Well, I just posted the picture.
If everybody refresh your page. Wow, interesting.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting.
Huh. Is that an actual place people go to? It's like a resort or something?
That's Neuschwanstein Castle in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you go there and have tours and whatnot, you know. So it's, you know, royalty doesn't live there anymore, but, you know, people can go there for tours and things like that. And it's actually the model for Cinderella's castle.
Okay.
At Disneyland.
Right.
So.
I see clouds in the distance.
Clouds in the distance. Now you have, this big boxed structure on your drawing.
That just means man-made structure. It doesn't necessarily mean that it had to be rectangular. Even
okay.
though I imagine the top view of that castle is rectangular.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting just in terms of your scale, in terms of your picture.
That is.
Your drawing versus the photo, the scale is actually very similar. I mean, you don't have the vertical elements in your thing, but when you just look at, you know, from, you know, if you were just doing like a box style rendition of that landscape, I mean, you got it nailed. The other thing is like, you know, you've got the clouds up the top, you've got a horizon line, right? In this case, it would be the mountain, you know, the mountaintop line. So structurally, in terms of design, I mean, it's very similar.
Well, and on top of it, the arrow is actually pointing to a window, looks like.
Yeah.
So you were zooming in on a room, it looks like.
Yeah, I was zooming in on basically the main hall of that castle, you know.
Oh, okay.
So.
Very interesting. I did get brick pattern.
Oh, it's definitely got that. I mean, the whole front, the very front wall of this castle is like brick.
Well,
obviously brick.
I have a question. Do you know what the coat of arm colors are?
The coat of arm colors? No, actually, I don't.
That'd be interesting to find out. I've got red, blue, and black as far as colors on the inside of that room for some reason. So, anyway,
okay.
Let me post the second one up and see what we get. This has not been a bad one tonight. Let's see. Choose file. All right. Let me save that. And the second one is now posted. And if you refresh your page and go down to the second thread, the second entry on the thread, let's see what I've drawn. And I don't know how skewed this is. I was feeling a little pressed for time. I mean, I was still comfortable and everything. But this is like right before the show. And what you're seeing, I guess, more or less, is it's outdoors. There's a car. There's a person in the car kind of thing going on. Cream colored. Got leather interior.
All right.
Person inside's tired.
All right. Let me see what I've got going here. Let me post the photo. Take me a second.
All right.
Okay, it's up.
All right, everybody refresh your page, and the picture should be there. Oh, that's cool. And what do we have here? Out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
I got the vast outdoor part right. I don't see any roads. That's Monument Valley.
Yes, it is.
Quite curious.
So, were the triangular things trees?
Yeah, they were supposed to be trees or plants or whatever you want to call them.
Okay.
I don't think they were the plateau buttes at all. But.
Okay.
This is what I was getting at. You know, you're asking to remote view a picture, and when you remote view pictures, it's a little different than just cold reading and somebody saying, "What's on my desk?" kind of deal.
Right.
So. But it's still interesting. I got the vast outdoors down. So I knew if we were outdoors.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if there's a trail there or not, you know, but it's, I mean, there's clearly greenery around, not trees, though.
Right. Is this a picture you took yourself or?
Oh, no. I just got this off the net.
Oh, okay. And see, that's even harder to verify something like that because there's no way to prove context of what I came up with. You know,
right.
It's not like that farm that you had, that what I had was not totally, you know, wasn't correct until you turned around and pointed out that everything I had in there was correct. It just wasn't in the picture. So that's kind of interesting. I wonder if the photographer actually had a cream-colored car.
You know, again, you know, the way you sketched out that your drawing, the composition, you know, Doug's pointing out, you know, that log is in the position of where you drew that, what you thought was a car.
Well, that's true. Is there a bug on that log?
I don't know.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's cool. Well, another week down, and we'll see what the queuing does to see if it actually increases accuracy for me. And that would be pretty interesting.
All right. And now I guess it's time for a word from our sponsor. I think you need to bring on Mr. Kelly.
Oh, Mr. Kelly. Hey, Doug, you there?
I are here.
What's the good news, man?
Hey, everybody, welcome. The good news is that yesterday, hell finally froze over and we received our 501c3 tax-exempt approval from the IRS, U.S. IRS, and we are excited. We had filed this application back in the beginning of November, and after almost 10 months, we finally got our approval, so we are now an official 501c3 nonprofit organization. Isn't that cool?
That is very cool. Now, this is going to open us up now to actually receiving donations and things like that that are going to help us do research, right?
Yeah, it makes it so that people who donate, their donations are tax deductible, and it also will allow us to apply for grants and get funding for different projects and so forth. And so, I mean, this may not seem like a big thing to a lot of folks, but I'm telling you, to apply for this kind of thing is unreal. I mean, it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of time, actually. It's supposed to be 3 months, and it took 10.
Yeah.
And
I remember when you guys were doing the paperwork, how long that took, and it was unreal just to get the paperwork filled out.
I probably spent 60 hours doing the paperwork, you know, researching, trying to understand it. And, of course, you know, you got to take a course in trying to understand IRS talk anyway, so, which I didn't do. I just did it on my own. But it worked out. We got, of course, some direction from North Star Child Advocacy in Claremont, Florida. They do this kind of a thing for nonprofits. So we got some help from them, and it's a fantastic thing. And there's a lot of reasons why it's fantastic, because I think one of the things it does is shows that Paranexus is here to stay. I think that's a big thing. We're serious about this. We have gone through the paperwork. We've gone through the legal channels to become a legal nonprofit, and you know, you don't just do that if you're not committed. That's a big word, committed, or should be committed. One of the two. And after I did the application, I think I should have been.
Yeah.
So, Doug, most of these sites that are out there that are saying that they're nonprofits, that's not really correct, is it?
Well, it's a bit ambiguous. You know, a site can say they're nonprofit if they're nonprofit, and you can incorporate as a nonprofit, but that doesn't mean you're tax exempt. So there's a difference between the two terms. You know, a nonprofit simply means you're not in it for the profit. You're trying to do something, usually for charity or a charitable mission, which is what we're trying to do. You know, we have a charitable mission and purpose for research and education. But tax exempt means that it's a whole other level of nonprofit status. So if a group says, or any outfit says they're nonprofit, that's fine. I mean, you know, I'm not going to automatically distrust them. But to say that you're a 501c3, that means that you've gone through the application process, the legal channels, and so forth, to be tax exempt. That means people who donate can write that off their taxes. And so, you know, our long-term goals are to establish a facility for research and training, a center. Our short-term goals, I think, you know, pending the board's approval, and I'm sure they will, is that we would like to find some kind of a trailer, you know, like a travel trailer type of thing, that we can convert to a mobile facility where we can have equipment in it. We can take it on location. We can take it to investigations. We can take it to a particular site to conduct research inside or out, whatever. And so we've had a request on our website for a long time now for, you know, anybody who knows of anybody who has any kind of a travel trailer, preferably in the, I don't know, 25-foot range. You know, even if it's a fixer-upper, that's no big deal. But if anybody knows of anybody who wants to donate one to charity, we would really love to talk to you so we can, now the way is cleared to really get the show going.
That's wonderful, man. That is wonderful. Yeah, I'm
it
excited
is.
By that. Because I mean, that's going to open us up to actually be able to do larger scale research projects now. And that's what's going to be great.
Yes, because, you know, any of these other outfits or organizations that offer grants, you got to be 501c3. If you're not, they're not even going to talk to you. So we may have opportunities there. Of course, we're going to have to search for those grant opportunities and funding opportunities. But we've got this big step out of the way. We're official, and we're going to move forward just as always.
Well, that's cool. Very good. Very good.
Well, congratulations, Doug.
Yeah, to all of us. You know,
yeah,
this
congratulations,
Paranexus is a it's an organization of great people, and I mean that sincerely. This is not hype. The people we have are just simply great. We have talented people on as members and as board members, and we're looking for more. So, if you are not a Paranexus member, please come join us. You know, we're open. We don't compete with anybody. We're willing to work with people, share things, share concepts, brainstorm together. There's a lot of benefits to membership. The membership fees are low compared to other similar organizations and associations out there. And just so everybody knows, Paranexus is not a, quote, investigation group, unquote. It's an association, like a trade association of anomalous researchers, paranormal researchers, whether you're a ufologist, a parapsychologist, a paranormal investigator, a cryptozoologist, whatever. We bring them all together, try to serve individuals.
Yeah, that's a good point, Doug, because I don't think that a lot of people realize that, like, for instance, you know, I found it and have my own team up here in Virginia. Mike's got his stuff going on down in Arkansas. I mean, it's not that it's like we come together in a common purpose, but we're all individuals or individual teams.
Right. Individual investigators
things.
Or teams. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we bring it all together with Paranexus. We get help. I mean, members can, and even the public can submit photos and videos and things for review. But members give us an especially good go at that because they can post these things and they can in our forums and they can get feedback on them. And it's a great educational experience. I mean, a lot of people have taken the CPI course and gotten certified as investigators, and yet the learning continues, the training continues inside the forums. And it's a great venue. It's a great way to learn. It's a great way to bounce ideas off each other and brainstorm. So there's a lot of great benefits to Paranexus. Really,
no, absolutely.
Are.
You know, I used to be a police officer, so I was obviously trained in, you know, investigation and stuff like that. But, you know, the average police officer doesn't do evidence analysis at you know, at the technical level. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I've learned a lot from, like, you and Mike and others in terms of how to, you know, review a photograph or a piece of video. You know, that was skills that I just, you know, I didn't have. You know, I have other types of investigative skills, but that was an area that, you know, I needed to develop. And, you know, being able to work with you guys on these things has been very helpful.
It's an ongoing process, and the more people you have catching things, the better you get at it. And we've all done that. We have some great analysts, if you will, as members. They can catch things. They've been around the block a time or two. And even though, this is another important fact, even though Paranexus may not be as well known in the paranormal community, and certainly, you know, the board members, all of us are probably not well known in the community, but I'm telling you, I'm here to tell you that our board members especially and our members are some talented people. They are very effective and professional at what they do. You know, it's unusual, and that's why they're there, because they're great.
Yep.
And my hat's off to them.
Absolutely. Oh, I want to bring up something while you're here, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to sit there and plug somebody. Oh, go
hey,
ahead.
Mike. Yeah. Hey, Mike. Don't be asking for a raise on the air. It just gets really kind of embarrassing. You know,
oh, that's not a problem. We'll quadruple his pay.
Okay. Well, that sounds good.
Yours too.
Okay,
sure.
Great.
Well, I just
can
want to say something, and I don't know if you agree with me here, but I want to tell, and if the guys at HostGator are listening, good job. Good job for getting our servers back up and going today. Yeah, we were down for about 45 minutes to all the members and everything, and I was just really happy with the way they handled it. So
yeah, they did a good job. We upgraded our server, too, tonight, and that was in anticipation of the expected and anticipated influx of donations and memberships. So, yeah, of course, I would love to believe that. But hey, we've upgraded our server, so if you've got your hosting on Paranexus, you should see some improvement, even though it was pretty good. Yeah, we have no idea what happened. It just, the MySQL servers went down, and they don't even know what happened. So we're working on it, but hopefully the problem is fixed for good.
Yep. All right, guy. You want to talk about your show Thursday real quick, and we'll let you go?
Sure. Thursday night we have Jeff Harvey on Paranexus Universe. Grant and I will be talking with Jeff about remote viewing and consciousness projection, especially in connection with the so-called God helmet that maybe some people are familiar with. I know that Dr. Persinger has, you know, really pioneered that technology. But the God helmet is something that you put on. They stimulate the frontal lobes and temporal lobes, and they get the person that's the subject will feel like there's an entity right around them, like a spirit type thing. So we're going to explore that kind of thing with Jeff Harvey this coming Thursday, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. And just as a quick update, the week after we have the Gray's Agenda with Nigel Kerner. He just released a book on that topic. The week following is Gregory Kent back with Psychic Perspective, and he's got Michael Brooker back, who is in England and was a very, very eloquent speaker, and he's a medium, psychic medium. And then on the 23rd of September, we are honored to have Dr. Raymond Moody join us to talk about near-death experiences. He wrote a book back in 1975 called Life After Life. It's an excellent book, and I'm looking forward to talking with Dr. Moody about what he found, because it offers compelling proof of life after death. So that's what's coming up.
Oh, very good, man. That sounds great. And, you know, the more donations that we get, the more things we can provide to the public as far as information and media and just anything to learn from. You know, that's the whole point here. You know, while we're here is to teach people the reality of what's going on and not a bunch of folklore, you know. And through donations, that helps us push forward. And, you know, we're able to supply the public with more tools, per se,
to learn
by. So, well, Doug, it was great having you on, guy. That's a wonderful announcement.
Great. Thanks. I'll look forward to listening to the rest of the program.
All right, guy. I will talk to you in a little bit.
All right. Take care, you guys.
Take care.
Bye, Doug. Okay. Actually, I want to talk about an article that was on our anomalous news feed this week. And it actually comes from an examiner.com article. And if you go to the same link as before, the last thing it's listed is a debunked video. And click on that, and you can see the article, and you can also see a YouTube video clip that's in question. And I just wanted to briefly talk about that whole thing. Now, at Paranexus, you know, we're not in competition with other groups. We don't like badmouth people, and that's not what I'm trying to do here. On the other hand, I want to point out a few things that, you know, when people want to post stuff and put it on YouTube, then I think it's fair to comment about it, okay? And I have a real hard time with this particular video for a number of reasons. And evidently the reporter from Examiner.com did too, because, I mean, he chose to write about it. The video basically shows a ghost hunting group in the kitchen of some alleged haunted location. And there's a woman sitting in a chair that has rollers on it, casters. And the chair appears to move. Okay.
She has her feet up in the air, right?
Yeah, she's all tucked into the chair, so basically her feet and everything are off the ground. And the thing is like when you look at the video, it becomes apparent that on the off-camera side, her hand's down and her finger is pushing off on the wall and causing her to roll. And if you look at the video closely, at one point you'll actually see the chair that she's on like pivots, and you can actually see her finger extending out towards the wall. Okay? Now, it's interesting because the cameraman, he's filming that, comments at the beginning of the video, he's going, "Wow, your chair moves every time my camera's not on you." And I thought that was just kind of a telling statement, and then I watched the video, and it's like, well, yeah, because, you know.
It's rather evident.
Yeah, it's evident that this is not something paranormal. Now, the other thing about the video that bothers me is that all these quote-unquote investigators are screaming and giggling and shrieking, and it's just like, really? So let me get this straight. You're going to take a photo or you're going to take a video of you acting like little children on an investigation and put it on YouTube like that's a positive thing? Let's assume that what we don't have here is fraud, because that's
my
opinion of it.
Why were they not getting their equipment out quickly and doing a check of what was going on in that area?
Well, I don't want to criticize their investigative technique. I'd like to just talk about their demeanor and, you know, the whole concept of professionalism. Now, you know, I'll bet you just about anything, if we track down their website, there'd probably be some mention in there that they're a professional scientific-based group, because that's what all the websites say, right?
Yeah.
So what does it mean to be professional? Does it mean that you go out to a location like that and you scream and holler like a little kid at a fun house? You know, even if those things were happening were real, you know, there's a certain decorum that, you know, a professional maintains. You know, you just don't bust out. You know, this was like the equivalent of, you know, the run, dude, run thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was just not okay. Well, evidently, the other half of this story is, a gentleman from another group sees the video, sees that there's nothing paranormal about it, contacts the group, points out, hey, look, you know, there's some issues here. You know, her finger's pushing off on the wall, causing the chair to spin. And evidently, the other group took offense to that and defended their video. And so then he decides to do a video that's an analysis of the original video. And that would have been okay if it was kept at that level. But evidently they called him names and said he was ignorant or an idiot and didn't know anything about physics and stuff like that. And when you hear him talking about it, his analysis, obviously he does understand the physics in terms of why the chair behaved in the way that it did. I mean, it was very thoughtful in terms of his analysis. The problem is that I think that he did his analysis video right after someone had called him, you know, basically told him he was ignorant. So he's all fired up and angry. And that comes across in the video. And even a couple times he's just so wound up, he'll misspeak. And you know, that's okay. Except here's the thing. he then puts out a video that shows him making misstatements and also basically, you know, saying that the other group's a bunch of idiots and stuff like that. And then I guess he felt bad about it. So on the front end of his video, he puts a disclaimer saying, oh, I don't normally act this way. And, you know, I didn't represent myself well or my group well in what I said in this video. Well, okay. But he still posted the video.
Right. He should have taken that down or at least revamped it without those comments.
Because just saying that, you know, I regret what I said, you know, just in terms of, you know, he was on really firm ground in terms of his analysis, but he sort of shot himself in the foot in terms of letting it go get personal and basically begin name calling, because that ends up being the distraction.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then they kind of lose the point of it. Then it just seems like two different groups are calling each other names and stuff like that. And like, you know, and like, Sharon just posted in the chat room, they got an apology at the beginning of the video for their behavior. But the point is, that's kind of like that the genie's already come out of the bottle at that point. What people saw was this gentleman acting in not a professional way. It's on video. It's out there forever now. So again, you know, even though he said, you know, I'm sorry for how that all played out, the fact of the matter is, you know, if they had concerns about that video, they should have either pulled it or they should have, you know, not put it up.
That's correct. Well, it was a double fault on both ends, you know. The one thing I noticed, you know, what I pride myself in being, you know, belonging to Paranexus is that's one thing you will not catch us doing. And if they do, they're out. You know, we do not, there's no name calling, there's none of that crap going on in our group. And I'm really, you know, and that's something Doug's brought up, you've brought up, a lot of people have noticed that in the ghost investigation arena, there's a lot of this going on, even within the groups themselves. You know, that they're just, everything's on a personal level instead of, you know, being scientific about everything and not taking things personal when somebody finds something that may say that it's not paranormal, you know?
You know, I'm always, like, trying to figure out what was in it for that woman to fake at an investigation that there was something paranormal going on. I mean, see, first of all, at that point in time, who she was basically lying to were her co-investigators.
That's right.
Because they're spending time trying to document, quote-unquote, this phenomena. So, you know, I mean, the easy answer is obviously she wanted to be the center of attention. But, you know, you got to ask yourself, you know, why does a person do that? Because at some point, you know, I tell you, for instance, if someone on my group did that, they'd be out. There'd be no second chances, you know. No. You get to be honorable once. You know, and you get to be trustworthy once.
Well, you break the trust when you do so. I mean, there's no way you can ever, ever, ever even trust the information they bring you ever again. Even if they did bring you the best evidence in the world, you still have to call it in question because of that one circumstance. Even if they were playing a joke, you know.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's troubling, and you know, it's like.
Well,
I don't usually look at the stuff on YouTube because most of it's all false.
Well, yeah.
You know, everything that I come across, you know, you have that moment of like, oh my God, was that for real? And then you look at it and stuff like that, and then you can tell that it's been manipulated or whatever, you know. And that's unfortunate. And I just don't get, you know, and it's not just the ghost hunting community that falsifies evidence. I mean, look at all that fake UFO stuff.
Oh God!
It's out there.
That's,
you know?
that's big time CGI work. I mean, it's all over the place too. And
well, even before that, I mean, think about how many pie pans have been photographed in midair.
Oh yeah, well, or chicken incubators.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to say that, but anyway, that's an old Dansky. I can't even pronounce the guy's name correctly. Joke, but anyway, you know, what's sad about all this is there's more of that going on than actual real scientific investigation. You know, and that's really a shame, because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people out there. And with all the people out there, if they actually took this more seriously and really focused and learned better skills and everything, we'd have a lot more evidence, good evidence, and actually be able to, you know, come to conclusions. But, you know, like with this situation, this is pretty much what you, like the other day you were talking about, you know, like for instance, if somebody's cheating on their time and turning in false time, they worked with somebody, you know, on a payroll.
Right.
That's the same exact thing. That's the same, that is the same moral level of what they're doing. You know, they're cheating. They're being, you know, that's just not right. You know, and besides, what if, now let's just take this for an instance. What if the entire community, I know this, I know better than this. What if the entire community thought that was real for, you know, whatever reason? What would happen? You know, all of a sudden that changes everybody's perception of those kind of circumstances, and all of a sudden that becomes real evidence across the board.
Okay, I can actually give you a good example of what happens in the real world when people falsify research. My wife's a cancer researcher, okay? And over the years, there have been certain researchers or research groups that, because they were, I guess, fearful of losing their grants and stuff, they started falsifying their results. Okay? And what ends up happening is then they publish these falsified results as basic science, and then other groups are saying, oh, well, that was pretty fascinating. So then someone else will base their research on fantasy results. So you know the next piece of research isn't going to work because the first set of numbers was false.
That's right.
And so you can talk about losing tens of thousands of hours of research time and literally millions of dollars because someone's okay with lying to their peers about their research and their evidence.
Yep, skews the data. And all of a sudden your data field, the entire data field, becomes skewed because of this.
But it's like you say, it's like, you know, when someone presents something and then the community accepts it at face value or even looks at it to a certain level and says, well, you know, this seems reasonable. Okay, we're going to start doing stuff based on this. You know, it's like it means hundreds of hours, thousands of hours of time being spent for something that's just, you know, there's nothing to it. You know, for instance, my group, we try and work with a lot of other groups in our area and do co-investigations just because it gives us an opportunity to see what others are doing and, you know, share information and stuff like that. And we were working with this one group, and certain people on their team were smoking at the investigation site, okay? And not only were they smoking at the investigation site, but they were smoking while they were taking photographs at the investigation site. Okay, so we get this email a couple of weeks after the investigation, and they've got these, like, real crazy photos. And I've been at the site a number of times. I knew exactly where the photo was taken at, right?
Right.
Well, the photo was taken when I was there while some of these people were smoking, and it's this wispy, you know, kind of ethereal.
Are you
vapor
telling
thing.
They call it vaporous apparitions? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the guys on my team called and said, hey, you know, you guys were smoking when you took that photo. So you really can't say that it's what you're saying because you were contaminating that environment. And even if this was actually something paranormal, you can't say that it is because you were doing something that creates exactly the same effect.
Yeah.
And guess what?
What's that? They had a fit, didn't they?
Oh, no. They said, oh, yeah, we understand. But you can now go to their website and they'll talk about the apparition that they photographed outside the building.
Huh.
And it's nothing more than their smoke is what they got.
Well, see, and then that's, you know, I've got a rule. You know, if the smoking light's on, camera's down. And that's just plain and simple. You know, but this goes to training, right? You know, we're going back to being trained properly and knowing what causes problems. I'll give you a good for instance. Did you read in the news that gentleman dying on the railroad tracks that was a paranormal investigator?
What?
Right?
Okay. Yeah, except, first of all, we don't really know that he was a paranormal investigator. We know that he was out there hunting ghosts or something of that nature.
Right.
But
my point being here is, number one, whoever was leading the team didn't have common sense enough to tell him to keep off the track on a trestle. You know, it goes back to people having common sense, being trained properly to use common sense, you know?
Well, I mean, that's the whole reason that we promote certification within Paranexus, is that people have a certain level of knowledge. So when they go into the field, they have a certain level of knowledge, okay?
Yeah.
And they've also, you know, if they end up being one of our members or they're part of our field investigator program, they also adhere to our code of ethics in terms of our, you know, what's appropriate professional behavior in the field. But, you know, it's just I was telling Doug, I guess it was a week or so ago, I found another certification site, paranormal certification site, on the web. And this particular site, basically, you basically write an essay, and based on your experience, they certify you. So I thought, well, this is an interesting concept, kind of self-serving, because it really doesn't tell you anything about the level of your training or anything. But when I went and looked at their members, they had about 20 of them, and the last four on the list were dead.
What? As in recently deceased, or are you talking?
No, I mean
historically deceased.
Historically deceased, like died in the late 1800s. They were like early paranormal investigator type people back, you know.
Oh, when they were setting the basis for paranormal investigation, kind of.
Yeah. So I thought it was interesting that this certification group listed them as a member, given the fact that this organization was founded January 2010, and some of the people had been dead for about 120 years.
That's curious. Well, you know, that goes back to, you know, if you're going to go out and research some place to be certified through, you need to thoroughly investigate who you're going through, you know, to know that you're getting good information. You know, with us, you know, you can talk to our members and just find out what kind of level of education we have about a lot of, you know, there's all, like Doug said earlier, we have a lot of people with a lot of different skills that are just, it's unreal the level of experience we have overall in Paranexus. And you know, and like the Academy, those courses, they're wonderful courses. They cover a broad spectrum of topics. You know, of things you need to know before you get out and do investigations. So.
Well, you know, Mike, I think that we're just about out of time. Why don't we go ahead and wish everyone a great evening.
All right.
And thank you for joining us.
Are we going to be on next week since it's Labor Day weekend?
Well, I plan on being here. I don't know if you're going to be, like, lazy and bail on me, but I'll be here.
Well, I'm excited because I'm going to be doing that remote viewing with cues instead of just being pictures. So,
okay. All right. So hopefully everyone will join us next Sunday night at 10 o'clock.
All right. Well, everybody have a good night and have a good work week, and we'll talk to you next Sunday. And join Doug Kelly and Grant Rumendunst on Thursday night with Paranexus Universe. So we'll talk to you next week. Take care, everyone.